Welcome, this is your host, Zaida Sorel Medina with The Voice Podcast. Aunt Doris said that my brother Ricardo and I were visiting our mom, Yetta. According to Aunt Doris, Yetta got herself together. She was fully rehabilitated and even got custody of our older brothers, Andres and Jonathan. It was also my sister Myra's birthday. Myra was adopted out of the family and I never met her. Ricardo and I were thrilled. I was 8 and he was 9. It almost seemed like forever since we last saw Yetta. Not to mention, we were also going to meet our sister Myra. On the way to her house, we passed through the St. Louis ghetto. The ghetto hadn't changed since we moved with Aunt Doris. The streets were filled as usual. Moms with their children at the bus stop. Boys at the park playing basketball. And driving down the street with their hydraulic cars listening to rap music. The taxi man pulled up to my mom's house, a brick house across the street from an elementary school and a liquor store. She came out running with her hair rollers in her head and tissue between her toes. She greeted Ricardo and I with a hug that seemed to last forever. She paid the taxi man and we followed her upstairs to her home, in which she referred to as her sanctuary. When I entered the living room, Andres was feeding my brother Christopher, a newborn, in the lazy chair. He was 14 years old and all grown up. Jonathan, a year older, greeted us with a hug. His voice was still deep, just like before. They gave Ricardo and I a tour of her sanctuary. The four-family flat had 2 bedrooms. The hardwood floors were chocolate brown. It also had air conditioning, heating, and hot water. Everything you needed to get by in the ghetto. The bathroom had clothes hanging above the tub. My mother never got rid of her ancient ways. She still hand washed her clothes and hung them to dry. It was home and she loved it. "So where's Myra?" I asked my mom as she showed me around her sanctuary. "What do you mean, honey? Isn't it Myra's birthday?" I asked. "Of course. So where is she?" "Darling," my mom said, "Myra isn't coming. You thought Myra would be here? No. We're celebrating Myra's birthday, but she won't physically be here with us." "What do you mean?" "Myra may not be with us physically. But she's with us in spirit. She's inside of our heart." My mom placed her hands on top of her chest. For a moment, I thought my mother was going crazy. A person could not fit inside of your heart. I was confused, and I wanted an explanation. She said that Myra had a closed adoption, so she wasn't able to be with us. We had to celebrate her party without her. I never went to a birthday party without the birthday person being there. But the peculiarity of the situation in my 8-year-old mind made me feel uneasy. Hanging out with my mom was an adventure. She wanted to know everything. Did I like living with Aunt Doris? How were things at school? Did I have a boyfriend? I did not want to tell her how Aunt Doris did not give me enough food to eat, how she forced me to go to the basement. I did not want to tell her how my only friends were imaginary. I did not want to interrupt my mother's grace. And so I told her that my grades were good and I liked living with Aunt Doris. And then my mother told me what was going on in her world. "I'm enlightened," she said. I didn't know what enlightened meant, but it seemed like it meant something good. My mom smiled and drank her coffee. "Means you can see the light. Means you've been saved by God." She rambled on about her amazing discovery, in which she called enlightenment. "I'm not a drug addict. I'm a child of God. All those people in those NA meetings can kiss my Spanish ass." My mother was a sassy woman from the hood, blunt, unhesitant, stoic. She told me story after story that I was too young to understand. Stories about the devil, stories about God's love, and stories about enlightenment. Since my mom opened up to me, I decided to open up to her. I told her about my guardian angel friend, who started visiting me shortly after I moved in with Aunt Doris. I knew that she was real because she always granted my wish. For example, one time I wished for students to leave behind their juice in the cafeteria after lunch. The following day, on the top of the table near the cafeteria exit, behold, was a table filled with orange juices that students left behind. My mother gave me an all-knowing smile and nodded her head, "Yes." "Yes, child," she said. "Did you know you were born with a veil?" "What's a veil?" I asked. "It's an extra layer of skin on your head when you're born," she explained. "Means you got special powers." I couldn't believe it. I had special powers. I wanted to use them to fly away from Aunt Doris, leave behind the basement and all of the smoke from her cigarettes. But my mom didn't tell me what kind of special powers I had. She just grinned and told me that one day, when I got older, I'd know what kind of special powers I got. Later that evening, we gathered around the kitchen table to cut the birthday cake in honor of my adopted sister, Myra. Yada stuck a candle on top of the cake and said joyfully, "Now let's sing happy birthday." My siblings smiled gaily, but a strange feeling came over me. Apart from the peculiarity of the situation, I felt sad. I wanted to know, where the hell was my sister? How long would it be that we would have birthday celebrations without her being present? And so we ate the cake and ice cream, and I imagined my sister Myra somewhere in the world, perhaps also wondering about her biological family. Before I left my mother's home, I wanted to do something nice for her. The only thing that came to my mind was to clean her kitchen walls. So while everyone was in the living room, I seized the opportunity to surprise clean my mom's kitchen walls. I grabbed my brother's toothbrush in the bathroom that he used to clean his shoes. I rubbed it with soap. Then I found the largest dirt spot on the kitchen wall and began attacking it with the toothbrush. Slowly, the dirt spots disappeared, one by one. My mom walked into the kitchen and saw me scrubbing the walls with a toothbrush. She gasped. "What are you doing, honey?" she asked. "Don't you like it? I'm scrubbing the walls." She stood there as if searching for words. She finally opened her mouth and said, "Oh, sugar, you're so thoughtful. But you don't have to do that." "Yes, I do," I said. "Don't you like clean walls?" I know that it may seem like we're poor, but we're only poor on the outside. On the inside, we're rich. I didn't understand my mom's metaphors. To me, being rich or poor had nothing to do with what was on the inside. It had everything to do with what was on the outside. Hot water, gas, food, clean walls. Perhaps my mom already knew this. Or maybe she was too consumed in her great deal of optimism. Either way, all I wanted for my family was to live in a clean house, rich or poor. On the way home in the taxi, my mother handed me a bottle of perfume. It was her favorite kind, she said. White Diamond. Now you have something to remember me by, she said. And then she went on. You're two fine children. She smiled. It was the most questionable smile that I'd ever seen. Before she could complete it, her high cheekbones quickly resettled into her face. It was as if she had never smiled at all. We will be together again one day, sugar, she said, squeezing my cheeks. And the car taxi drove away. And I wondered if this would be the last time that I would see my mom. That night, I stored the White Diamond perfume under my bed. When I wanted to smell my mother, I sprayed the perfume on my wrist. I closed my eyes and thought of her. About that lady who reminded me of the color burgundy and the damp and wet leaves in the fall. I want to thank you all for listening to The Voice Podcast. This is your host, Zeta Cyril Medina. This episode has one main takeaway. Targeted to people who are foster and adoptive parents, step-parents, legal guardians, or people who are stepping in to watch someone else's child. Even if you aren't acting as a parent, maybe you know someone else who is, who you can share this message with. The takeaway that I'm going to provide you stem from my experience as a former foster and homeless youth, foster parent, and social worker. The takeaway is that we must find ways to honor, acknowledge, and remember our child's biological family. For me, it was important to have my mom's White Diamond perfume because I was able to connect with her and by extension, my siblings. Having something physical that I could see and touch allowed me to connect in a meaningful way. In a way, we can kind of think of it as a coping mechanism. Because at the end of the day, being separated from birth parents is a trauma. While we can't eradicate that trauma overnight, we can take baby steps to mitigate it. Now, as a foster parent, I'm charged with the mission of ensuring that my child can remember and develop positive memories and feelings about her biological family. One way that I honor my child's biological family is by having memorabilia. Specifically, I have a photo of her biological family hanging in her bedroom. Other ideas can be a photo album or a photo of where the child comes from. Another way that I honor my child's biological family is by referencing her biological family. What this does is that it brings the child's biological family into reality. It reminds them that they have roots. It tells them that those roots are important, and I acknowledge that. I may say, hey, you look just like your other mom, or your hair is pretty just like your other mom. These are just two ways to honor, acknowledge, and remember our child's biological family. There are so many other ways. You have to find the way that works for you and your child. Thank you all again for listening to The Voice Podcast. This is Zayda. If you have any suggestions for future podcast episodes or topics, email me at ZaydaCyrilMedina@gmail.com. Until next time.